period.
Oh.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of
mouth. From NHPR, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. This week, we're talking about work, what we do, what we can do, and how our attitudes and expectations about making a living have changed under the long shadow of the 2008 financial crisis. Today, we're taking advantage of some good timing. Dine is holding its CultureCon tomorrow in its Manchester Mills headquarters. With us are two participants in the gathering, and they're here to talk about how companies create workplace cultures that attract and engage and retain workers in meaningful and lasting ways. That really is a challenge here in New Hampshire, where younger workers are leaving the state in far higher numbers than those moving in. On the line with us is Gray Chynoweth. He's COO of Dyn. That's an internet infrastructure company with a long list of awards. It's known for its very employee-centric culture and fun workplace. It was voted the most democratic workplace of 2013 and won the number one job creator in New Hampshire award from Inc. magazine. Dyn pretty much holds a permanent spot in the New Hampshire Business Magazine Awards and also from Stay, Work, Play for its leadership. Welcome to you, Gray.
Excited to be here. Thanks.
So that's a big, bold, young company in the new economy. Also with us is Amanda Osmer. She's part owner and director of sales at Grapponi Automotive, winner of Volunteer New Hampshire's 2013 Spirit of New Hampshire Award, among many others. She's in the fourth generation of Grapponis to own and help operate her family's business, which started as a gas station back in 1924 and has grown to five new car franchises and many other services. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So for starters, let's consider the place of workplace culture in your organizations and your missions and your operations. Gray, where does culture stack up in how Dyn operates?
Well, for us, it's central, top and center because, you know, it's right alongside with customers. You know, when you think about what a company does, they've got to deliver value to their customers and they've got to be a great place for people to work because it's the people of any business that make it all happen. Especially in the technology sector, you know, the more sticky that you can play, you can make your business, the more interesting and engaging, the more productive your employees can be, the happier they'll be, the more committed they'll be to serving customers, which obviously results in overall company success.
Amanda, your family has been in a successful business for decades. So why does culture matter at Grapponi?
The short answer for me is it's not part of what we do. It's all that we do. And that's been a recent change. We did it about 2 years ago. We focused really on homing in on what is our mission statement. And, you know, maybe that sounds really boring and I'm not going to learn anything from this program. But after 89 years of having various mission statements that involved selling a boatload of cars in northern New England and all sorts of other things that people might be able to measure, we wanted to say, okay, but really, truly, who are we as a breathing, living organization? So when we came up with our mission statement, we actually hired, he's our director of corporate potential. He's someone who helped to put that on paper for us. His name is Mark Brown. And I can't even tell you, as soon as that was in writing and people could coalesce around it and self-select out of the system if they didn't agree with it, or stay and put their hearts and their heads and their hands into the business, everything has changed. It's more fun to be at work. People are more collaborative. Ideas, energy, things are creative, things are flowing. And it's just, to me, the culture is that that's all there is.
Both you and Gray are known for the employee-centric culture at your respective workplaces. You know, inspiring, fun, kindness, respect. These are some of the things I read in your mission statements and your descriptions of your companies. Not attributes that may have been valued in corporate culture in the past. Gray, I'm interested in when that shift really began for you and Dyn.
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of, in a certain way, it's built into our DNA. You know, I think the folks that first got together to found the company, you know, did it during college, and they wanted to work at a place that was really consistent with the fun atmosphere, with the, you know, innovative and, you know, kind of curious way in which we approached the technology challenges that we were facing, the really engaging and warm friendships that we had with each other and now that we have with our customers. But it really is so connected to the way that you pay people, the rule sets that you have, the guidelines really more that we have, which is it's one thing to like talk about culture, but you really have to find ways to live it and to tie that into everything that you do. If your culture is, you know, something that you put up on the wall but no one ever lives it, then it doesn't have a lot of meaning. And so for a long time, we didn't have anything written about our culture. I think we were maybe, you know, before we had it really built into some core values, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70 people. And the reason was is we just lived it. And then we realized we needed to kind of start documenting it to make sure that, you know, when people joined, it didn't just happen by osmosis that they learned our culture, but they kind of got a head start on it to really live and breathe the way that we collaborated with each other and our customers.
Well, Gray, you're talking about an organization that was incorporated in 2001, building this into the DNA. And I'm curious for you, Amanda, a work culture that's been going on for a long time. How do you change from within fundamentally?
The simplest answer is making your mission statement evident so that people can agree with it or not. It was made very abundantly clear between the mission statement and how we were choosing to now pay people that business as usual is no longer happening. So business as usual to me means if a person's selling enough cars and making enough money for the store, that's fine. If, you know, turn your cheek if something is going wrong that maybe they shouldn't be doing or that they could improve upon, because the result is the money, and that's, if it's there, you know, everybody seems happy. So for me, it's just sort of an, I guess, a dissecting of the whole business model. What does success really look like, and how do you make it crystal clear to people every step along the way? Am I doing the right thing or not?
Mm. That is Amanda Grapponi-Osmer, Director of Sales and owner of and part owner of Grapponi Automotive. Also on the line with us is Gray Chynoweth of Dyn, an internet infrastructure company. And we're talking about creating work environments and cultures that people really want to show up for. They want to come to every single day. And that takes some work. That takes some doing. It's the topic of a gathering of people called CultureCon that's going to be taking place tomorrow. It's sponsored by Dyn. The question I imagine for a lot of business owners is about scale. You know, you have a lot of small businesses in New Hampshire just trying to stay afloat. Maybe there are 5 employees. How does creating positive work culture scale? I mean, usually we look at how things have to scale up. How about scaling down?
Yeah, I think for us, it's, you know, I always say that culture isn't about spending money. And if it's about spending money, then you're looking at it the wrong way. For a long time, when we were a very tiny company, you know, that people love to play ping pong. So we had a ping pong table, and that's, I think the first one we bought was maybe $100, and we had snacks in the drawer. So I think the small things that you do really are more about what people like to do rather than spending money on them. So I think you can go down all the way to the very, you know, hey, it's a picnic. Everyone, bring your own food picnic. You know, you can do things that are really inexpensive, but that just foster that camaraderie and trust that makes a company a great place to work. It doesn't have to be expensive. It just has to be well thought out.
Does this culture sometimes evolve to policy questions or much bigger questions for you than just running a company?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we couldn't be more engaged in a couple of the policy conversations at the state level. You know, we're passionate about creating an environment that supports people's interest in STEM and the arts. So we just have been supporting the Manchester School District and doing a kind of an initiative called STEAM Ahead New Hampshire at West High School. We're big supporters of the idea of rail to allow people to get, you know, kind of to and from the Boston metro area up to Manchester so that we can access that pool of talent. It's really, you know, I think in a lot of ways we view it as a tax. You know, for any company that wants young workers, it's just expensive to relocate them here. It's expensive. You have to pay them more if they're going to, you know, kind of commute in from out of state. So, you know, it's a tax on New Hampshire employers if we're not figuring out how to attract those younger workers here to the state. We're involved with Stay, Work, Play New Hampshire, you know, fostering that young workforce that thinks about the next kind of service offerings and the next type of companies that are going to be global in scale. It's hugely important, and it's what we're all about from a policy perspective.
Let's see. We've been talking this week here at NHPR about the changes in work since the economic meltdown of 2008. And I'm just wondering how both of you have experienced that change in terms of the employees that are coming to you. There are so many more people who are looking for work. How mm-hmm. have you been able to manage all that?
Last year, we had just over 1,400 people apply to work at Grapponi.
For how many jobs?
I think we ended up placing about 75 of them. Mm. So one of the kind of high water marks for me is when we had more engineers than anybody else applying. It seemed like times are really, really tough out there for engineers to cross over into a field that is arguably fairly opposite from their natural skill set of wanting to maybe sit behind the scenes and analyze things to going out to selling cars and having to face people all day, every day. We have seen a sharp decline in people who I would categorize as being just well overqualified. I mean, we had PhDs applying for sales positions. And that,
did you send them over to dine?
Yeah.
We'd love them.
I will make sure HR calls you, Gray.
But there does seem to be this divide. And, you know, we read about job fairs, or we hear about or see pictures of people winding out the doors, you know, for job fairs in New Hampshire, looking for work. And yet Dyne and other high-tech companies and you are trying to sort of attract people with how good you are to your team, how beneficial it is for your staff to be there. Are we looking at a kind of tiered employee system here in New Hampshire?
I think, you know, it's really been interesting. I think we see two things kind of happening. The first one is, you know, what it means to be employed or underemployed. You know, a lot of the people that Dyne attracts, actually, we're not competing with another company. We're competing with them working out of a Starbucks, right, or working out of a co-working space. Because nowadays, people in the technology fields, you know, they can make a lot of money doing a lot of things a lot of different ways. And I think just from a workplace culture perspective, that's why you've seen the emergence of like the Alpha Loft over in Portsmouth and co-working spaces around the country, because people want to have that camaraderie, that culture of going to some place and collaborating and talking with people who are in their fields. And you don't necessarily have to be at a larger company to do that. You can do it in a lot of different ways now. You know, for us in terms of competition, you know, it's really hard. I think there's a skill gap in the United States. That's why, you know, immigration of foreign skilled workers is such an important issue to us. You know, there really just aren't enough people who have the type of technology skills that the companies need. So, you know, that's why it goes back to the STEM stuff. I mean, we've got to just produce more of those workers. And I think that we've got to create educational pathways for people who have been doing things that weren't in technology to learn how to develop those skills so they can actually, you know, bring a lot of value to bear in the new economy.
Gray, is this going to be what people are talking about tomorrow at CultureCon?
I think so. I think people are going to be talking about, you know, how do you build and sustain workplace cultures, how you, you know, basically don't kind of over-optimize around what leaders think, optimize around what people, you know, in the employee base thinks. You know, people are going to be saying, hey, what do you do that's different? You know, the workers that come to the office today, millennials or Gen Y, they're different. You know, I think this is one of the first times when you have so many generations working in one office space together. How do they get along? You know, I think you hear, you know, older workers saying that younger workers are entitled, and you hear that younger workers saying that older workers don't care about, you know, all the other aspects of their life and don't understand work-life balance. So it's about generating that conversation and opening up pathways that make people trust each other.
Gray Chynoweth, COO of Dyne, the company that created and is hosting CultureCon. Amanda Osmer is director of sales at Groponi Automotive and one of the speakers being featured at the conference. You can find out about the event. There are very few seats left. It's taking place at Dyne's headquarters in Manchester tomorrow. You'll find a link online at wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you for spending some time with us today as part of our station-wide series, How We Work 5 Years Later. NHPR is asking listeners to contribute to the conversation by answering a daily question. You can do it online at nhpr.org. So today's question is, are you planning to delay retirement and maybe work more years, longer than before the recession hit? And if you're a younger worker, do you expect to work longer than your parents did? You can check in on the series and contribute to the conversation online at nhpr.org. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please join us for more Word of Mouth tomorrow at 2, right here on NHPR.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Bill Berry,
and Zach Nugent.
Our intern is
James Pouliot.
Digital support from Rebecca Lavoie
and Sarah Plord.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters.
To subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
You can also join us on Facebook and Tumblr at Word of Mouth Radio.
Follow us on Twitter at Word of Mouth.
And check out a playlist of music from the program on Spotify.
Word of Mouth
is a production
of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Radio.